Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to episode 17 of the Rex Chapman Show with super awesome Josh Hopkins. This is the Hondo Havlicek episode 17.
17. Yeah. Mullen. Chris Mullen.
Mully. It's the Chris Mullen episode.
Mm-hmm. 17. That's a good one.
Yes, it is. I can't wait. We got a good guest today, though. You know?
Yeah. Please preview it. Let's don't keep them waiting. Tell us who it is.
We have Ferguson Jenkins, Fergie Jenkins, a Cy Young winner, an old timer who is just, he's on Twitter now. Somebody I find incredibly fascinating.
He's had quite a life. I look forward to this a lot.
Quite a life. Anyway, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm good, man. What we should do the book club where what we've read this week. What have you read, Rex?
Nothing.
Me either. That's been book club. What about the playoffs? What do you
can't wait.
I mean, it's been a lot of fun.
I'm back in Phoenix.
You said you thought the Nets would win. And to be fair, injuries, so whatever. But at this point, would you say the Suns are the favorite?
You know, I'm a little bit of a homer, Suns homer, and I'm not afraid to admit it, but I think they're the most complete team remaining. If I had to lay odds, I would probably say the Bucks, just based on their previous playoff experience the last couple of years, I think has served them really well. Mm-hmm. They have an MVP type guy right now in Giannis, who gets a ton of calls. Also, he's impossible not to like. I mean, that guy, yes, he doesn't shoot the ball well, but he's a fantastic basketball player, and he's a guy, you know, you watch all the interviews, you see all the things that he does and says and all that. He's a guy that if I'm just a fan, a father of kids, and they want Giannis's jersey, I get him Giannis's jersey.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
And he's a good guy, but do you think he's the best player left? And not considering the best playoff basketball player left amongst the teams, amongst all the players left?
I think Chris Paul is.
Okay, you just think he's been through it enough.
I think if you could pick your point guards to, you know, possibly play the last six games of the season to win a title, and you all had all the point guards available in the whole NBA, you'd have to think long and hard about Chris Paul just to as a game manager. I mean, going to turn the ball over. You give him your game plan and let him go. So, you know, with him back, without him, it was a little dicey, but with him back, I think, you know, they just continue to roll. Hopefully they'll finish off the Clippers. The Clippers have put up a terrific fight, but I want to ask something, because a guy at the airport actually asked me this yesterday. He said, what do you think about Kawhi sitting up in the suite with his team in the playoffs?
And I went, good question.
Yeah, you know, I struggle with that, because I think, you know, Bill Russell wouldn't have done that. And, you know, guys in our era, Michael, if you're hurt, you sit on the bench. You're down there with your team. Now, if he's on crutches, I get it. Maybe that's different.
Right.
But I don't see, you know, Kobe. I mean, when LeBron's hurt, he's down there on the bench. He's out there.
Right.
And it may not be a big deal for that team. Some teams don't care. But I've found on the teams that I was on, when a guy separates themselves from that unit, it can rub some people the wrong way. So I just wondered what you thought. And did you even think about it?
Not till this second, because I'm not as intimate with the game as you are, but it would seem to possibly open the door to raising the question, is truly the team chemistry the problem?
That's all.
With the Clippers, because they've obviously got the pieces, but is that what it is? It's just that could be very indicative of their problem.
Yeah. And again, this could be nothing. This was a question somebody asked me. I tend to give guys the benefit of the doubt. Like, I thought, I don't know what I thought. I do know when it struck me when they first showed the picture of him sitting in the suite, I kind of went, interesting. Because I expected him to be down on the court. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw some shit into the air and see what sticks, you know.
Well, I enjoyed your perspective on that.
Who do you have? Who you got coming out of the East, Josh?
I'd say the Nets. Just kidding. They're out.
You're silly. You're so silly.
I mean, it's obviously got to be Giannis and the Bucks, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then
they've established, unless Ice Trey goes crazy, who's become almost – just appointment TV.
Yeah.
He's different. The way he pats that ball, the way he moves, the way he gets other guys shots, the way he is not afraid of the moment.
You need to peep this though. Something I've noticed about him. He's really fast. He's got a great stride. He runs like he without the ball, just watch him move from one end of the floor to the other. He glides. He's got great feet. The other thing about him is he makes the Stevie Nash left-handed hook pass on the money to anywhere on the floor going to his left. Just, passes that I would have been going to my left and then made this way.
Right.
You know, like that.
I would have been going to my left and been like, I can't go to my left. I dribbled out of bounds. So,
yeah, you can't dribble out of bounds when you're inbounding, you know.
That's a great drip. Point. Yeah.
Well, bud, you want to get to Fergie? Let's get to Fergie.
I'd love to.
Let's do it. Ferguson Arthur Jenkins Jr. Fergie Jenkins joining us. How about this?
Yeah. Happy to have Fergie. You, Fergie. You're our second, you're our first baseball player, but second Canadian. We had Katie Lang on, and I wore this in honor of you. You were once named the best athlete in all of Canada. You got that award. What's that like to be the best athlete in an entire country?
Well, I won the Lou Marsh Trophy several times. And, it doesn't impact you until you hear it from someone else. Because I'm playing a sport that I loved, baseball. And when the season's over, you get judged on what your performance was all about. So, people kind of puts you in a category, and it happens. I played against a lot of good players, and then all of a sudden you got a category against Gordie Howe, Bobby Hull, other athletes that are Canadian. Right. So, it's not astounding that particular thing happens, but you're proud of the fact that you're in the same consideration of these other great athletes.
Sure. And more than consideration, the best athlete in all Canada. That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, well,
it is.
I played a sport that took a lot of skill, and I had good teammates behind me. So you don't always do or accomplish things alone. So there's a lot of other people involved.
Was baseball your first sport, your only sport? I know you played other sports later, but what was the first sport you played that you were like, well, I'm pretty good at this?
That was hockey, my first sport.
Really?
I played as high as a junior B. And I enjoy playing in a little small town, Chatham, Ontario. And Gene DeJura, the scout that ended up signing me with the Phillies, thought that hockey was not going to be my best sport. You know, and he seen me play baseball, but I was a first baseman, a kid, 15, 16 years old. And he had an opportunity to evaluate my arm, and we wanted to know why I didn't try to pitch. And I said, oh, we have pitchers on our team. And lo and behold, within 2.5, 3 years after that, I signed a pro contract with the Phillies.
That's amazing. They just had never pitched you before? That's just it?
No, that was the answer. I had just never volunteered to pitch. We had guys like Jack Howe, Matt Kundle, Dennis Roebuck, and Eddie Myers. And they were the pitchers on the team, and I wanted to play regular, so I wanted to play first base with Eddie Robbins. So there were two first basemen we had. And as you said, lo and behold, within a year, I turned 16. My birthday's in the winter months. So I turned 16. That next year, I was pitching.
That's amazing. You didn't pitch till you were 16, and you end up being one of the all-time greats, a Cy Young winner. There's like three people that have over 3,000 strikeouts with.
Yeah, there's four of us. There's
four.
Greg Maddux, Schilling, and the Spanish player. I'm trying to think of
Pedro Martinez.
Pedro. Yeah, there's four of us.
That's amazing. Over 3,000 strikeouts with less than 1,000 balls, and you didn't start. You didn't get on the mound and really pitch till you were 16. That's
16
crazy.
Years old. Yeah, and you know, Gene and I would work out every Tuesday and Thursday nights at local gymnasium CCI in my hometown Chatham, just pitching, throwing, and within that following summer, I pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs. I had a couple of low pitch games. And all of a sudden, I've got Pittsburgh. I've got the Red Sox, the Cubs, the White Sox. I got like six teams coming to my hometown wanting to see me pitch. And because of the fact that the Phillies worked with me the most, I decided to sign with that organization.
Wow. It seems to me, real quickly, that, I mean, obviously, you're just a magnificent athlete to be able to do that.
But I was fortunate enough to play. And as I said, good teammates, you know, the reflection of you playing is not you as an individual. A lot of times, although I had some success, guys behind you win ball games for you. So
sure. But that's very humble to get on there at 16. You must also be a really fantastic student to pick up like that, like a way to concentrate more than most. Did you ever think that about yourself? Like, oh, he told me once and I figured it out.
Well, yeah, I think because the fact that Gene DeJura was an ex-player himself, he was my mentor. He kind of was a tutor. So he would show me, he showed me a real easy windup, which I ended up using almost my whole career. The grips on certain pitches. And I was very fortunate enough in the Philly organization. I went to winter ball 2 years in Puerto Rico. Cal McClish was my pitching coach, taught me the slider. And then the late Freddie Martin taught me a changeup. And those pitches combined with my fastball, a little bit of a curveball I had, those four pitches got me to win ball games. So it wasn't all by myself. You know, you're learning from other people.
You know, I'm listening, and I lived in Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix today, but I lived in Phoenix for quite a while. And one thing that I realized very quickly is it's baseball year round here. You know, it's warm weather. It's not like that where we grew up in Kentucky. And every kid from this age, from 5 years old, you know, has a pitching coach. And, you know, everybody thinks their kid's going to make it to the majors. And I wonder, you had such great longevity. I wonder if it helped you pitching later. You didn't really start pitching till you're 16. Do you feel like that benefited you in the long run?
I think so. You know, I was a lanky kid at 6'4", slender, weighed probably 100. When I first started pitching, probably about 160 pounds when I went into high school at 15, 16 years old. So Pitching, I think, when you look at it, it was an exercise. And as I got better at it, I think it became, I said to myself, that might be a job.
Wow.
A livelihood. So wow. When I signed at 18, right out of high school, Gene DeJure said, once you sign, you're going to become a professional athlete. You got to carry yourself a little different. You got to do things that the organization wants you to do, in the Philly organization. So I was very fortunate. Cal McClish, as I said, took me to winter ball. I was 19, 20 years old and pitching in Puerto Rico against a lot of really established stars like Clemente, Cepeda, Gonzalez, Pagan. So, these guys were stars in their own right. And then all of a sudden, I started to catch on to what this was all about, and I got good at it. So it took a little while. It didn't happen overnight, believe me.
Sure. That is so quick. Also, your story reminds me, like, to put it in different terms, it's like you're in a band and you play the trumpet, and the guy goes, you know what? You're pretty good at trumpet. Why don't you come over here and try and play guitar? And you're like, yeah. And then they taught me four chords, and then I became a legend. I mean, that is so unique, especially like we talk about in this day of specialization and kids having coaches early. And also you were known, speaking to your point, Rex, about saving his arm all that time. You were known as a guy that finished games, complete games. You were that guy. Do you think that was part of, like Rex said, saving your arm, or was just different times?
Well, I think – the complete game situation happened with Leo DeRocher. I was a pretty good hitter too. So he would leave me in ball games a lot of times because I could bunt, move the runners up, and hit, put the ball in play. And he would come a lot of times in ball games in Chicago. He would walk by the bench and I'd be sitting there, and it's like the seventh or eighth inning. He says, hey, big fellow, we're giving the bullpen a rest today. Like that. Or warming up in the bullpen prior to the game, he says, your game to win or lose today, like that.
Wow.
So, it was a confidence builder, too.
That's great.
And I enjoyed that part of it. 260 complete ball games, 67 complete ball games. When I look at it, I enjoyed pitching. To me, sometimes late in the game was a test to see if you can complete the ball game, get the last 3 to 6 outs, and to win a ball game.
There's got to be so much mental, that goes on, with you and with yourself and the batters. I want you to try to explain something to me. I've been trying to follow what's going on the last few weeks in pitching and in baseball. When you played, though, going back, I think yourself, Bob Gibson, they lowered the mound.
The mound.
Can you explain to me why they did that?
Gibson and a lot of players, that 68 season, I think there was maybe 6 or 7 20-game winners in the National League and 4 or 5 in the American League. And the dominant part of playing the game is basically pitching. Gibson had a 1.20-1.25 ERA. He won the Cy Young. He won 22 ball games that year. I won 20. Negro 120, Gaylord Perry, Marischal. There were so many guys that were winning 20 games. The league all of a sudden said, well, pitching is too dominant. The mound is 18 inches. We're going to lower it to 12 to 13 inches. The tallest mounds in baseball were in Houston with the Astros and Chavez Ravine with the Dodgers. And all of a sudden, these pitchers are all having excellent seasons. We're going to lower the mound and see exactly if pitching is still going to be that dominant, which it was. That following year, 69, there were still 20-game winners in baseball, and I was one of them. But I just think that pitching can be successful as much as it can be if you've got a good catcher. The catchers are so important. I had Randy Hundley for years. Gibson had McCarver. Marischal had Haller. geez, Louis Tiant had Carlton Fisk. I mean, there's so many guys. And the Dodgers had, oh, let me see. They had Roseboro. And I think they had another. I can't think of the other catcher they had. But, you know, when you kept Koufax and Drysdale winning some, and Padres winning so many games, it doesn't always fall on the pitcher. It's that catcher that knows what to call, where to put the sign, the positioning, and games are won like that. And it doesn't take much to say that, well, he did his job, but the catcher does his job too.
Rex, continue with that point because it's interesting. But I want to know, did they lower it in the middle of the season?
No, it started after the season was over, when Gibson won the Cy Young, following spring training, come 69, they lowered the mound.
It's like during the training,
and then they lowered the mounds in all the ballparks.
For you, Rex, so you can understand, since you don't know baseball like Fergie and I do, it'd be like during that era, your era, where it was center dominated in a lot of ways, them raising the basket a foot.
Yeah.
That's fun, meant, you know, that's weird. What is that? It's so, you know, weird.
So to go back though, in baseball right now, I want you to explain it to us. Apparently, you know, they're cracking down on foreign substances on baseballs. Now, how long has this been going on? 10 years, 50 years? And why has it become such a big deal right now?
Well, I think putting a foreign substance on the ball has been going on for 25, 30 years. Phil Reagan used Slippery Elm. Gaylord Perry used Vaseline. Jim Bunning used clear pine tar, which I did too. Early in the season in April, when it's cold, you're playing in either New York, Chicago, Pittsburgh. I mean, in Montreal, you're pitching in 40 degree weather sometimes.
Yeah.
Late in the season, same thing. In the playoffs, World Series, I think Stickum can enhance you getting a better grip on the ball. I don't know. Now they say it gives a better spin ratio.
Right.
I'm not sure. But now they're cracking down. The only substance you can put on the ball is maybe rosin. And the rosin is on the mound. But guys use other things.
What about the sunscreen?
Yeah, well, sunscreen, it's sticky. It's some kind of substance. You know, for years, Tommy John, and I think it was possibly Drysdale and a few other guys with the Dodgers, cut the ball with their belt situation.
Oh, really?
Hell yeah! Well, you know, Pat Corrales was a catcher in the Philly organization. He would scrape the ball along his shin guard and throw it back to the pitcher. You know, they change the ball every pitch almost now. The ball hits dirt, change it. I would love to have balls that had a little dirt on them, grass stain.
Right.
Grip the ball a little different way, you know, fill the ball with a little dirt, rub it up, the ball sinks, sails, that type thing. But now they're cracking down on foreign substances because of
now,
that.
Now, why?
They think because the pitcher is too dominant.
Okay.
The batting averages are really, really bad now come 2020 and 2021. Guys are hitting below 200. Guys are still hitting home runs, but the batting averages are down. RBIs are still there, but the batting averages are down. Not many players are hitting 300. And
cracking down
on advantage. That's the advantage they think has been given to the pitcher.
So they're trying to level the playing field.
In some respect,
Will cracking down like this just straight away, will pitchers be a little more wild?
You know, it could happen where guys maybe get clipped on a pitch every so often because they use a brand new ball every pitch. At one time, the umpires had to rub with that Mississippi mud, rub 6 dozen balls up. Now they're using 12 to 13 dozen balls for a game because every pitch, they throw a ball out. If it hits the dirt, after every out, they throw the ball out. The third out in the inning, the ball's hit to the outfield. The outfielder throws it in the stands, or the third out is at first base. The first baseman gives it to a kid along the first yeah. base line. So, you know, I just think that, they, as you said, level the plane is a little different, but they're using so many balls per game, and the balls are not really rubbed up. So you'll see a guy on the mound wetting his tongue, and then he rubs the ball up. We weren't allowed to do that. You had to be off the mound, off the surface of the mound, the dirt. You could do it on the grass, rub the ball up, come back up, and pitch for the ball. But now, if Gaylord Perry and Bob Shaw and Drysdale, all these guys, and Phil Reagan could put four subs on the ball would be doing some crazy things.
If I knew, I'd go out there. I'd just so much sunscreen. I'd have pomade all over my hair. Probably still have toothpaste in my mouth. I would take advantage of every way I could. And I guess they were, but cracking down. It seems like in baseball, it's so much ebb and flow to that. They, you know, we're saying now the baseballs were too juiced a few years ago.
And right.
The,
yeah.
You know, Raleigh's so it's like
Raleigh's wouldn't come clean and said because of all the home runs hit. The ball's wound too tight. It has instead of having a cork center, it has a rubber center.
it looked
there,
like
there was
it
a theory.
Then.
They wanted us to pitch from 70 feet, move the mound back 70 feet instead of 60 feet, 6 inches, which would be crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like you're throwing grenades in there.
Yeah, right. I mean, the velocity would be a lot less. The ball would have a different plane to it. Hitters got an advantage. They use pine tar. Some of them have cork bats. The bats are lighter, longer, and they can do what they want a lot of times with bats, but not a pitcher. I mean, you know what? One time, here's another theory. That Oakland started it because of the fact that you weren't allowed to use light color shoes, but Oakland had white shoes. All the pitching gloves had to be tan or black. Now, gloves are red, purple, green, gray, white. They go along with the colors of the team.
Yeah.
My whole career, I used a Rawlings glove that was tan, almost saddle color. That was it. I never used another different color glove. But now you can multicolored gloves, multicolored shoes. It's all changed.
It has changed. Yeah. Fergie, I want to go back. What was it like growing up in Canada and what do you know about your mom? I mean, she had direct descendants who came up in the Underground Railroad. And, you know, what was it like for you not only growing up there, but what was your experience like as a young African-American man playing baseball in the States and in a lot of places where it wasn't real welcoming for a young black man.
Well, you know, I started to play, as I said, in 1962 with the Phillies, and I got signed. The first city I played in was Miami. And I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name. It just slips my mind now. But he had given us a little testament. There was four players of color on the team, Alex Johnson, a kid named Wayne Green, Reno Garcia, and myself. And we couldn't go to Miami Beach. We couldn't eat in certain restaurants. We had to give on the road trips in that Florida State League. There was Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, St. Pete, Palatka, so many different Tampa. We had to give our meal money, our money to the white players when the bus stopped, and they would buy whatever we wanted, hamburger, hot dogs. We didn't make a whole lot of money. We got $2 a day meal money. So you weren't getting a whole lot of money. And they would bring the food back to the bus. In spring training, we couldn't eat in certain restaurants in the spring. But, I mean, it was a little different. And it all changed in 64. But to get back to the cities where I played, I played first was Miami. The second city was Chattanooga, Tennessee. And the third city was Little Rock.
Yeah.
And Little Rock was kind of the worst. I played with Dick Allen, and there were four players of color on that team. Marcelino Lopez, a Cuban, Richard Quito, Panamanian, Dick Allen from Pennsylvania, and Fergie Jenkins from Canada. And three pitchers and one outfielder, infielder, Dick Allen. And his name was Richie, and then he changed his name to Dick. But he had a little tough time playing in Little Rock because we're the first players of color in 1964 to play there. And it was a little tough on Dick because he was a regular, played there every day. And he first started in center field, then they moved him to third, and then later on they moved him to first. But he suffered a little bit with verbal abuse, letting him know he wasn't liked on the ball club at the time with the Arkansas Travelers.
Wow.
It took a little while to come around, but other than that, the people really gravitated to Dick because he was a great athlete. I mean, he ended up hitting something like 35 home runs that first year with AAA, a lot of RBIs, and he really played well, made the All-Star team, and then the next year he was Rookie of the Year in the Phillies. So, but took me Marcelino got graduated, so did Richie and myself to the Phillies. So it took a while for us to come up, but Dick was the first.
You know, while we were, I was brushing up on you. It's talking to my father about you yesterday. I said, having Fergie Jenkins on. He said, Ferguson Jenkins? I said, yep, Ferguson Jenkins. So he'll be excited to listen to this one. You played for the Globetrotters?
Yeah, three seasons in the offseason.
That's amazing. How did this come about?
Yeah, Joan Zabino was the marketing individual with the Globetrotters. And their head office back in the 60s was on Michigan Avenue in Chicago. So he came out to the ballpark, and this is a great story. He came out to the ballpark and we're early in all day games. And this guy comes to the ballpark with a $500 suit, three-piece suit, and a briefcase. And he's walking down the left field line, and he's waving. And Rich Nye and I are standing in the outfield shagging fly balls. And I said, Rick, this guy wants either one of us. I waved at him, and he went, yeah, you. So I walked over to the wall towards the bullpen, where our bullpen's in left field. And he said, Ferguson, are you going to go back to Canada when the season's over? I said, yeah. He said, got an offer for you. We want you to be the pitcher in the skit where Meadowlark hits a home run off you every night.
Meadowlark Lemon.
Yeah, to in the third quarter. I played the third quarter every night. And into the third quarter, the first couple of minutes, they called timeout, and Curly says, let's play baseball, like that. So Curly's the catcher. Bobby Joe Mason is the pitcher. And you got Leon Hilliard. You got a few of the Globetrotters. And they're all playing the outfield. And the first pitch is thrown over Meadowlark's head. And they said, oh, hold it. We have a pitcher on our ball club. We got a 20-game winner, Ferguson Jenkins. And I have my sweats on. I take them off, run out there, warm up, throw a couple of pitches, give up a home run to Meadowlark. And this is how it all started. And then I was involved in the out-of-bounds skit, the referee skit. And I played the third quarter, 15 minutes every night. And it started in Montreal.
That's amazing.
Three Rivers, all the way down to my hometown, Chatham, Windsor. And I played about 20, 25 games. So it got successful. Now we'll push it to the U.S. We're going to go to Pittsburgh. We're going to go to Cincinnati, some of the cities where I played ball, and Chicago. And that first year, I probably played 45, 50 games. In total, I probably played about 180-plus ball games in three seasons. With the
Globetrotters. Wow. Were they was there ever a city that caught on to the confetti in the bucket trick?
Well, you know, that was one of the skits that they changed. The referee, a lot of times, would stand on the edge of the floor. And in some of these cities we played portable floors. And especially in the colleges, they had a portable floor that's up off the cement. Or we played in hockey arenas where the floor was up off the ice surface. And he'd stand there with his arms folded. Now Curly Neal started, instead of the confetti, he left about 2 or 3 inches of water in the bottom of the bucket. He hit the ref with it. Knock him off the court. And people would go nuts because you hit the referee with water instead of confetti. So that was another skit that really happened a lot of the people because of the fact that no more, because during halftime, Curly or one of the guys would rip up a bunch of plate paper. Instead of confetti, it was paper to throw on into the crowd. Now they knock the snot out of the referee. So, but it was different. I mean, Meadowlark just...
You had to have fun.
He captivated people by pulling kids out of the audience or a young lady.
Josh and I, we grew up going to the Globe. I did anyway. Did you, Josh? I went. Yeah. The Globetrotters would come every year to Owensboro, Kentucky. And I started going down to the Owensboro Sports Center. And, you know, by the time I was 10, you know, I felt like I knew Meadowlark and Curly. Mm-hmm. You know, they would come and, you know, they'd wave and all that. And then, fortunately, way later on, I got to actually meet them, which was, you know, amazing. But it's just, you guys had to have fun traveling city to city. And what did your baseball team think about you doing this? Were they fine with it? They worried about you getting hurt?
Well, I had a conference with John Holland, who was the general manager. I said, John, I'm going to be the pitcher that every night gives up a home run to Meadowlark Lemon. And I didn't tell him I was playing the third quarter.
I bet you didn't.
So we played in the amphitheater in Chicago, and a lot of Cubs front office people were there. And they watched me score a few baskets. And they said, Bert, we didn't think you were going to play. How am I going to stay in shape running up and down the court?
There you go.
So playing the third quarter. And, you know, a lot of the cities where we went, we'd have shoot-arounds. We'd play in Pittsburgh or Cincinnati or, you know, we played a lot of campuses. We played in Lansing or Ypsilanti. And we'd have shoot-arounds around 2 o'clock. Guys would get out there and really play some pickup games. And then they'd play that night. So it kept me in pretty good shape running up and down the court.
That it did.
Sure. It's a people don't realize when Rex and I were younger watching that, how the Globetrotters were like the circus. They were like, you know, stars came to town. It was so, I remember getting in a fight with my like fifth grade teacher, an argument, like saying, he said the Lakers could beat the Globetrotters. There's no way. The Globetrotters have never lost. They're way better. I've seen the Lakers.
Yeah.
I mean, they were magic to us.
They played college All-Americans a lot of times in the 50s and 60s and would beat the college All-Americans because they do so many skits that they for shaving points off what they had to do. And each one of those skits is worth 2 points. So the basket. Meadowlark and Jackie Jackson and Mel Davis, all these guys would do certain skits and they run the score up. They just couldn't
stop the game to run skits.
So when they played against the Washington Generals, they didn't have a chance. Those 3 years I played, we never lost a game. We never lost. We'd go to Hawaii and play on a aircraft carrier, you know, with Doc in San Diego, or we play in Hawaii. I mean, it was just incredible to play with some of these guys. They were entertainers, but also great athletes.
Sure.
You watch basketball now? You watch basketball?
Yeah, I've been watching the last couple of games with Milwaukee and Atlanta. And I just think that some of the things that they do now, charging and all the different, and the three point shot now has not ruined the game, but it made the game so impacted. The scores are 120 points now.
I think you're right.
It just the extra points. Now you have a specialist or two or three that all they do is shoot 3-pointers. That's all they do.
You're reading Steve Kerr's mind. We had Steve on a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, the balance has been shifted so much toward the offense that it, you know, we got to do something, and we're probably going to see that coming up. You know,
no defensive basketball.
Right, none right now. You can't touch anybody.
You can shoot.
Yeah,
So many guys, it take Young, he's a smaller athlete, 6 foot tall. And the fellow with the San Francisco team.
Stephen Curry. Yeah. Stephen,
I mean, this guy has changed the game. I mean, right. he shoots 200 or 300 three-pointers every season.
It's amazing.
He's breaking everybody's record. Harper's record, all the guys.
Everybody. Hey, yeah. Hey, Fergie, you've got a documentary coming out.
Yeah, it's going to be viewed on this coming Wednesday.
Fantastic. Tell us about it.
On one of the Chicago stations.
Tell us about it. But how long has it been in the works?
Well, they thought about it for about a year. And I was involved in it about almost 4 months, 5 months ago, where they wanted to put some footage together on some of the tragedies that I've had in my life. You know, I lost my mom early. She died very young, 52 years old. And it was during the season when I was playing in 1970. She got sick in 68 with cancer. And then she passed away in 1970. The funeral is like on a Friday. I flew to Montreal and pitched on a Saturday because my mom said she'd lived her life. You go ahead and live your life. Your life is in sports, baseball. Go ahead and play. And Leo DeRocher at the time didn't want me to pitch. I said, Leo, I'm fine. I think my mother would want me to play. I lost a wife through a car accident. She got pneumonia in the hospital. There was a suicide, murder, suicide. I lost a daughter and a fiance. And then my last wife, she got sick. She had a stomach problem, passed away. She got sick in 2014, died in 2018. So they wanted to put all these different situations, tragedies in my life. And at one time I said no. And then I said, you know, maybe people want to know things that happen to athletes, not because they're in the public eye, but we're just like everybody else. I've had those situations happen to me a lot of times, one during a season and a couple of them during the off season, and just the other one just before I got inducted in the Hall of Fame when Mary Ann passed and she had pneumonia. I left to go to do a press conference with Gaylord Perry and Rod Carew in New York, and she was in the hospital at the time, contracted pneumonia. When I'd come back, the doctor said they couldn't save her. It was something that, and it's a tragedy. You know, I told him before, I said, I've broken down lots of times. You don't have to be ashamed to cry.
That's right.
I cried lots of times. And I just went in a separate room by myself in the house and just felt guilty, started crying.
Yeah.
I thank you so much for doing that and sharing those stories, because we do put athletes and entertainers on a pedestal and just think about their wonderful life we wish they had, but to humanize yourself and to be vulnerable to people so we can, it provides perspective for people that otherwise it's unattainable to know what you went through and to think, oh yeah, they were just people just like I am every day, and my tragedies or whatever, not that happened in my life, happens in everyone's life, you know? So it's great perspective, and I appreciate you sharing. So I'm glad you did that. Can't wait to see you.
Yeah, Raymond, my second wife's son, who I adopted him when he was 4, and now he's 37, 38 years old. He had a huge part in this documentary. You'll see him. He's got a big beard. I mean, he's turned into a real man. But the nice thing about it is we together went to a therapist. I think 11, 12 at the time when his mom, Mary Ann, passed away. And it grabbed him more than it did me, I think, because he was still in public school. And he got had an anger issue. Oh, man. I had to go to school. The principal would phone me at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning and say, Mr. Jenkins, you have to come and console your son. You have to come to get him because he wants to fight everybody. He's angry. And I said, well, it's only part of his life because he just lost his mother. Yeah. And I think they didn't realize that the tragedy and all the pressure put on a youngster that really can't cope with it. And Raymond really didn't cope with it until he got older. And he displays this in this caption he has during this documentary. And to me, when I seen it, I started breaking down again because he broke down. And he didn't break down until he got older.
I'll echo what Josh said. I want to thank you. You know, you touched on something else. You know, I know I grew up in an era, so I'm sure you grew up in an era. It wasn't cool. Or wasn't even really, you weren't supposed to talk about if you went to see a therapist. Right. You weren't supposed to reach out for help. You're supposed to handle everything like a man on your own, you know. No, right. That's not how life works. And, you know, I think you know my story. I've been down. I've been up. You obviously have. Josh has. We all have. And right. Some of us do it in front of other people. You could walk off into the sunset and never talk about any of this stuff, but that you're doing it. I'm telling you, Fergie, it's going to help a lot of people. I've been in therapy and in rehab a few times, and you sit there and if you listen for an hour and there's 10 people tell their story, you're glad you have yours. Everybody has their stuff and we all cope with it differently. And I'm not surprised to hear you say, you know, he didn't really exhibit it. The anger and stuff until later, you know, how could he process? He was just a kid, you know.
For years, he kept all that in, you know.
Yeah.
Years.
I'm really amazed at you, dumbfounded that, you know, the stigma of mental health is really, it's still obviously fluid, you know, in sports, but really just now being sort of talked about and accepted that people need help. And the stigma in society is still there. I have friends that, you know, when they go through problems and I suggest therapy, you're like, you shy away from it for the same reasons. But for you to have the foresight to do it back then and to know that your stepson really needed it really blows me away. That's kudos to you. There's not a lot of people that had that intelligence.
Agree.
Well, you know, I knew I needed help. When I lost Mary Ann, because it was a tragedy because she had the accident in December of 90. And she was in intensive care 35 days. And I went every day to the hospital and she had a larynx tube where she couldn't talk, but I could try to read her lips. And unfortunately, as I said, she passed because of pneumonia. She was on her back all that time when fluid built up. But Raymond went one time and he seen his mom with all these tubes in her. He was terrified. He didn't want to ever go back.
I know.
Yeah, he didn't want to ever go back. But the thing was, every day I went, and then the day that I got inducted in the Hall of Fame, I went up to the hospital and I showed her the clipping of the paper. I said, I got to go the next day to a press conference in New York. And then when I came back, she passed. And that was like, it was like a kick in the so-and-so, you know? Yeah. And she's in a separate room. I'd taken all the tubes, whatnot, away. And I had a chance to say goodbye to her.
Yeah. You know?
That grabbed me really, really tough. That day was a tough day for me, you know?
That you're sharing it, man. It's powerful. And, you know, I know that I talk about some of my stuff at times and afterwards, you know, it's hard to talk about, but it's cathartic. And I hope you feel that way because, you know, we're going to have
my kids help me out.
People. Right? Good.
Yeah. Raymond's really helped me and my three daughters.
Fantastic.
Kelly, Dolores and Kimberly, they all live in Canada. And we talk periodically on a weekly basis, which is, that was good therapy back then in the 90s for me, for sure. And now with this documentary, it's even, I'm not sure if it's going to help in the long run, but it's good to bring it out again. You know,
I think it's going to help. I can't wait. Let's lighten it up a little bit. What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie?
Uh-huh.
You know, Ben-Hur.
There you go.
That, I watched that during the Christmas holidays. I enjoy watching the Star Wars movies. And I think before long, we're going to be actually, I might not be around for it, but, you know, visiting galaxies and inner space thing, type things, visits. Nice. And then people are going to go, there really is E.T. He's still around. He's been here for a while. He never left.
That's right.
He never phoned home.
Well,
any other movies real quick that jump out?
You know, the Bad Boy movies with Will Smith and Martin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Martin Lawrence. Yeah.
You know, I've watched, I'd say, movies with Clark Gable, Gone with the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
And you watch it and you go, you know, that's a lot of history, you know. Other than that, Josh, I'm not a big movie goer, but I watch movies a lot of times on TV. They come on.
We were just trying to figure. My dad is late 70s, but who was born same year? Josh was just saying.
You were born in 42, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And it was really interesting. Muhammad Ali was born your year. Aretha Franklin was born your year. And so were, interestingly enough, Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell, the two guys basically leading our country right now. We're born in 1942.
Wow.
Pretty good year.
I guess.
Yeah.
And so you've seen a lot.
Sagittarians, supposedly they're strong individuals. You know, there's a, because of the sign of the archer, but they've got a goal to reach and, they're pointed in that direction, and they try to reach that goal.
Well, you make Sagittarians proud, and stand up. You're definitely a strong man that's been through a lot. If you could have dinner with anyone in the world, just sit down, talk. Who might that be?
Ooh, wow! Dinner. You know, I met Jim Brown a couple of times, but with just personal appearances. And dinners in Cleveland or someplace in bigger cities, just to sit down and pick his brain on what he went through as a football player, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, somebody from a different sport that went through a lot of different situations.
I'd like to come to that dinner too. And throughout time, dead or alive, like a music group or just a singer that you could sit front row center, dead or alive, you could just take in the concert.
Well, you know, I've met a lot of the guys with the Cream, Clapton, Eric Clapton. You know, as you said, Gladys Knight, the Pips. You know, back then in my era, Berry Gordy and Motown was really, really big. The Shy Lights were from Chicago, and I've seen them perform. Amazing. You know, maybe Sam Cooke. He's masked right now.
That's great.
I got an interesting story for you. In 1962, we stayed in Miami. We stayed at the Sir John Hotel, where it was a hotel that was a collaboration where all the Black Stars would go. James Brown, Gary U.S. Bond, Little Anthony of the Imperials, and they all performed at that hotel.
Wow.
I didn't see a lot of them, but they were headliners. So, you know, to meet James Brown, he went through.
I bet.
James Brown. As I said, Sam Cooke would be another individual just to talk to.
So great list.
They went through as entertainers.
Yeah, great list.
Fergie, I'm so glad that we connected via Twitter. I want to ask, though, what made you start, what made you get on Twitter?
A gentleman in Chicago started the Facebook and the Twitter. And I said, let's do it. Let's see what happens. People want to be connected.
Yeah.
And I do some cameos from time to time.
Nice.
And what's nice about it is a lot of Chicago fans. Like, I think for Father's Day, I must have did 50 Father's Day selections, which was a lot of fun. People phone in, hey, I'm Rex, I'm so-and-so, I'm Jimmy, I'm, you know, say hi to my dad for Father's Day. And I did that. Right. Or oh, birthday.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did it. I have a lot of fun, you know, following you and seeing all the stuff throughout history. I love just seeing what you guys comment on yourself, Rod Carew. You know, I grew up watching Rod, just an unbelievable swing, and what a nice man. Hopefully we're going to get him on. Fergie, yeah. I can't thank you enough for coming on. Please come back sometime.
Okay. Yeah, let me know. I'll be glad to do it.
Can't wait to see the documentary on Wednesday. And thank you, Ferguson Jenkins.
Thank you. Please don't cry. Okay.
Thank you for your honesty and your openness. Thanks, Josh. It was really, really a pleasure. Right. Thank you, Fergie.
My pleasure.
Thanks, guys, bud.
Take care. All the best.
Josh Ferguson Jenkins. Fergie Jenkins. Wow. What'd you think?
What a beautiful human. Nice man and really intelligent.
Oh, my gosh. Just traveled. A globetrotter. Was a globetrotter while he was one of the best pitchers in the world.
That's unbelievable. I couldn't believe he didn't start pitching till he was 15 or 16. That's amazing.
It seems absurd. And what I found really funny was he was talking about how great his high school pitchers were. And I kept wanting to go, he named them off, five of them, but they were our pitchers. And I wanted to go, yeah, but none of them were Fergie Jenkins.
Yeah. And he named his other first baseman.
I know. Like,
they were all great. So I didn't have to just,
what a great teammate.
Yeah, exactly.
What a great teammate.
Exactly. And I couldn't believe he liked Star Wars. I wouldn't pick that in 100,000 years. No. But Fergie Jenkins,
That's what I love. You know, I'm glad he talked about getting on the Twitter. You know, it's man, 78 years old, 79. My dad certainly can't handle Twitter. He's a couple years younger. I like that we're learning new things about Fergie Jenkins at this stage of his life. I mean,
you know, a theme of a lot of the people that we've had on that have been is intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
He's not just going to be like, old Twitter Schmitter. Yeah. He's out doing it, seeing what's going on. That's, you know, what keeps the mind relevant to what's happening today. He was spectacular.
I agree. What a fantastic, and I can't wait to watch the doc now. And you talk about some heavy stuff that he's been through. Wow.
Yeah.
What a guy.
At one point, it was funny. I thought when he was saying the bands he liked, he was like, Gladys Knight, the Pips. I thought it was almost like he'd be like, Gladys Knight, I like, but the Pips, they were a bunch of assholes. And she carried them. They're over. No, it looked like he didn't like for a second. And then he was.
Those Pips.
Yeah.
Gladys Knight, yes. Pips, no.
No.
And go to the Pips. All right, buddy. Well,
enjoy the playoffs.
Playoff time. Can't wait. Let's go. Got to keep rooting on those Suns, man. All right, bud. Well, next time, Tuesday, we'll do this again. The Rick Chapman Show with super sexy, super cool, super awesome Josh Hopkins. We'll do it powered by basketballnews.com. Subscribe, rate, and review. See you next week.